sorrow in the street. The holy places where the races meet. From the homicidal bitch that goes.
Welcome back to the Pacifica Radio Network's live coverage of No King's Day, October 18th, 2025. I am your new host, Jenna Flanagan, coming to you from Pacifica's WBAI studios in Brooklyn, New York City. We are now in our sixth hour of coverage, relying on our team of dozens of reporters and producers. We're bringing you the sights and sounds of the growing resistance from Maine to Hawaii, from Florida to Alaska. Back on June 14th, the first No King's Day organized just over 2,000 local No King's Days, and an estimated 5 million people turned out. Well, today we are tracking close to 2,500 events, drawing crowds that are even larger, with our New York City reporters telling us the crowd in Times Square alone rivaled the crush of New Year's Eve. It's great to be joined by Maeve Conran, who you heard earlier, managing editor of the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Coalition. Maeve comes to us from the studios of KGNU, Pacifica's Boulder, Colorado affiliate. Maeve, how's it going out there?
It's going great, Jenna, and it's just thrilling to be part of this national broadcast. Thanks for having the Rocky Mountain West as part of your coverage today.
We wouldn't have it any other way. Maeve, before we get started, though, I want to go to, we actually have a reporter, Cope Cumpston, who's coming to us from WEFT, who's got some check-in and audio files, I believe, that were collected from the protests of today, right? Cope, can you hear me?
This is Cope. I do not have audio files for you. I haven't had a chance to go through them yet. Our rally is finished. It was from 12 to 2. It was very peaceful. We had gotten word from the county sheriff that he had heard about a counter-protest, and he gave very careful instructions on how to handle that, but nothing happened. We had an hour of speakers. What's notable about Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, is we're the flagship University of Illinois here. Uh-huh. So it is a liberal intellectual community overall, although we are surrounded by corn and soybeans. So we have both. Our first speaker was a lifelong Republican who told why he has renounced the GOP. And then we had three students from the U of I, one the labor union, one the student president, who is very concerned about the protest policy put in place by the university that is very restrictive. And she is working actively to get that reworded, if possible. But we heard from a broad range, and it was a very upbeat crowd, music, chanting, lots of inflatable characters, from a banana to a unicorn to a pig to a chicken. I'd say upbeat, very peaceful. And there was a march at the end that was quite considerable. We think we had about twice the number of people as the first No Kings, which was about 1,500. I'd put it over 3,000 today, but Wow. We don't have a count yet.
Wow, that's quite the description for the afternoon, especially with so many people. And I think it's the diversity of the crowd that you're sort of describing. I mean, everything from former Republicans or people who are now denouncing the party to, you were saying, you know, the typical liberal who you would expect at an event like this.
But we also have a very prominent Muslim community here, Latinx community here. So there was representation from all over.
And were there any foreign students there? As we know, foreign students have been challenged with getting their visas to get into the country. If they were partaking in any protests, then
we had some. The university has told their foreign students to be on the lookout and to have an airplane ticket and all of their papers in hand, because we have had students taken and deported. So there's a lot of fear on campus. We've lost millions of dollars in funding, and our students are being targeted.
Wow. Well, if there's anything that I guess in the larger picture of this protest, what was your biggest takeaway from seeing just the crowd that showed up, the energy that was there, the numbers, what was it that was your biggest takeaway from today?
I would say very upbeat, very outspoken, very pro-America, cheering for Chicago because Urbana is a sanctuary city and we are very sympathetic with what's going on in Chicago and very concerned because a large number of the university population are Chicago people. You know, there weren't many particular calls to action, but everyone's saying, yes, we must all be involved now.
All right. Well, listen, Cope Cumston, thank you so much for joining us with that reporting. That was Cope Cumston out of WEFT. And so, Maeve, I want to go back to you and ask you if you could tell us a little bit about the region that you're in, you and your radio station, Rocky Mountain Community Radio Coalition, serves.
Yeah, so I am part of this coalition, the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Coalition, as you mentioned. We're more than 20 public and community radio stations across the Rocky Mountain West, mostly in Colorado, very many in rural stations. And we're going to hear from some of those reporters in this hour. But we also have folks in Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico. And so we really have this commonality across this region, but we also have, you know, a college radio station right here in Boulder, and then I'm at KGNU, which is the Pacifica affiliate right here in Boulder. We broadcast in Denver as well, so we're across rural parts of the state of Colorado. We're also in Wyoming, as I mentioned, which is a very conservative state. Like, Colorado and Wyoming really couldn't be more different when it comes to politics. Mm-hmm. Then we've got Utah as well. And so it's been interesting to hear from the rallies and the No Kings protests around the region, from some of the smallest towns to right now it's still going on in Denver, which is the largest one in the region that's happening as well. And so, as I said, we have listeners all across the region, a lot in rural parts of the state. And what was interesting at the No Kings rallies, that many have already wrapped up, and so we're going to hear some reporter notebooks in just a little bit. You know, people really concerned about issues reflect, you know, that are happening in their community. Public lands is huge here. We have a lot of federal workers who have been furloughed and laid off earlier in the year because they work for agencies like the U.S. Forest Service. There are thousands and thousands of acres of public lands here. We have a lot of national parks in this area, too. And many of our stations are in what we call gateway communities. And now with the government closure, they're really being impacted in that way. Rural hospitals being impacted by cuts to Medicaid, that was a big topic that many of our rural communities were, you know, expressing frustration with in the No Kings rally. So it was interesting to hear from our reporters around the region the different issues that their communities are really concerned about.
Well, could you mention you have some reporter notebooks that we'll get to and I guess a little later today? Give the reporters a chance to like synthesize and process their pieces. But I guess, is there any audio from the events that took place today that you can share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I meant by the reporter notebook. So let's go to one of them now. I spoke to one of our reporters, the news director at our partner station, KDNK, and they're in Glenwood Springs. And so just to give a little bit of geographic context, that's right on the Colorado River, which is a source of water for many, many states, not just Colorado, which is the headwater state. It originates here, but Utah, Arizona, California, and going into Mexico as well. So water issues are really big here. Public lands are a big issue here. And so if we go to the Glenwood Springs report, we'll hear from our reporter there and some of the issues that were raised by the community at that No Kings rally. That happened earlier this morning. So let's go to our Glenwood Springs report.
I'm Marilyn Gleason. I'm the news director at KDNK in Carbondale, which is on the western slope of Colorado.
You were attending the No Kings rally in Glenwood Springs, a neighboring community. Can you give us a sense of who showed up today? How many people were there? What was the No Kings rally like?
Sure. This was organized by Mountain Action Indivisible, which is based in Carbondale, but there's some subgroups of Indivisible around the area, and they decided to focus on Glenwood Springs to kind of bring everybody to the same place. It took place under a bridge that comes over the Colorado River off of Interstate 70, and there was really a large, it's kind of a plaza and a pedestrian area, and boy, there was really a large crowd underneath there, and spilling out up these stairs to a pedestrian bridge over the river. I talked to John Field, who was doing some crowd control, and he's been at a lot of these protests, and he felt like this one is the biggest yet. He guessed at least a few thousand people and had heard that there were maybe 4,000 people here. Now, that's saying something because Glenwood Springs has a population of 10,000, and it's one of the larger communities here.
That particular part of Colorado, there is a big intersection with the federal government. There are a lot of offices and agencies belonging to agencies like the U.S. Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management. And a lot of people in that community are federal workers who've been impacted in the last few months from federal layoffs, then being rehired, and now, of course, the government shutdown. Can you give us a sense of how maybe some of that element was part of the No Kings protest today?
Yeah, public lands are really important here in this part of Colorado. A huge percentage of the land in this part of the state actually is federal land. And all along, there's been a pretty big pushback from this part of the world against these, takedowns of the public lands. You know, the protest gathered under this bridge and then everybody walked several blocks. What's interesting is they walked right by the forest supervisor's office for the White River National Forest. Now, the White River National Forest is a really large forest. It's the most visited national forest in the whole country. There's ski areas in the White River National Forest, the Maroon Belt, lots of really popular outdoor areas. And, it was the Forest Service supervisor's office has been shut down to the public, actually even before the Trump administration took office, due to lack of staffing. Now, once Trump was in office, the supervisor, Scott Fitzwilliams, took the fork in the road and resigned, and there have been a lot of layoffs in this forest since then. The information's a little bit hard to get, but I do have a friend who is still working for the Forest Service, and I've kind of heard secondhand that there's just hardly anybody working on the public lands anymore. There's really only a couple of people who are, making sure that permit areas are actually only being visited by the people who have permits. Even getting garbage out of these areas or keeping restrooms open has been a huge problem, I think, in some of the most popular areas. All of the tourist services are just closed up there. So public lands is a huge issue. I did see a trailer going by, kind of running up and down the street with a cartoon of Jeff Hurd. He's our representative in the House from this area. He's a freshman Republican, and he ran as a moderate. And this display on this trailer being pulled behind the truck had him a caricature of Jeff Hurd as Pinocchio, lying about how he would support health care, public lands, clean energy. All really big issues here. In Jeff Hurd's district, about a third of the population is on Medicaid. We're living in a area between a couple of really posh ski areas. Vail's down the road one way, Aspen is up the road the other way, but there are really big discrepancies in income, and housing is very expensive here. So there are really a lot of people in this area, even though it's kind of a high-dollar resort area, who are on the other end of the spectrum, and that cuts to Medicaid, is really going to have some severe impacts here. And Maeve, the other one is, I saw a lot of signs out there protesting ICE, and we do have a large immigrant population here, lots of Latinos and immigrants living in this area. So there were a couple of tables set up for Indivisible and then also for an immigrants' rights support group. And as I say, just a lot of signs out there on the road supporting those Latino immigrants who really do so much of the work here in our resort.
Well, Marilyn Gleason is the news director at KDNK in Western Colorado, reporting from the No Kings rally in Glenwood Springs. Marilyn, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thanks, Maeve.
Well, just to give some more context to that, Jenna, we were hearing there about Jeff Hurd, who represents a huge part of Western Colorado, most rural areas. That was a district that Lauren Boebert used to represent. And many of our listeners nationally might be more familiar with Lauren Boebert than Jeff Hurd. She's extremely conservative, very, very much aligned with Donald Trump. And she left that district because it was a very close election a couple of years ago that she almost lost to the Democratic candidate. And so she moved actually to a different congressional district because everybody knows here in Colorado she was very likely not going to win the next race. So Jeff Hurd, who was the Republican who actually did win that race, he really did run on a moderate platform. But so far, he has voted in every single vote right alongside his Republican colleagues, especially when it comes to things like the big budget, which is really impacting Medicaid, rural hospitals, which are a huge issue in his district, as we heard there, but also public lands and clean energy. So he has voted in step with Donald Trump and the Republican Party. And there's a lot of anger in that district as a result.
I certainly would imagine. The phrase, "this is not what we voted for," seems to be permeating everything right now. So Maeve, also, I'm wondering, in addition to the reporter notebooks that you shared with us, is there anything else you could tell us about, I guess, the way that people showed up for No King's Day in at least Colorado?
Yeah, I think people were really showing up in ways that were very reflective of their community. So I stopped by a local community close to me that was essentially people just lining both sides of an intersection. We'll probably hear from that a little bit later, because it wasn't necessarily space to march where they were, but people really wanted to show up. And there were a lot of elderly folks there that I spoke to who said they didn't have the stamina to go to some of the bigger protests. Mm. So they were really pleased to be able to at least come a block or two and have their voices heard. And so that took place in a lot of the smaller communities where people were lining the roads, not necessarily marching, but just getting to these very visible intersections. Denver, as I mentioned, is the really big one. And that's going on right now. They just started marching there in the last, I think, half hour or so. There were speakers there. There were, you know, a lot of folks showing up. You know, a lot of people were very concerned about the impact of ICE raids and whether that would impact folks showing up. And we'll hear from another reporter from a different part of rural Colorado in a few minutes, who was saying that actually earlier in the day, a community member was taken by ICE. And so immigration
on
is
No King's Day.
On No King's Day, they weren't necessarily at the rally, but they were in the community.
Yeah.
And so it's very much front of mind. A lot of the communities in this area are rural, agricultural, and many resort communities, and they all rely on immigrant labor. And so there has been a huge amount of tension about what's happening with immigration and a lot of community support for immigrants. I mean, very much, I'm sure, what you're hearing from folks all around the country. But it is interesting how that plays out in some of these smaller communities, because even though politically they might be more conservative, economically they're hugely reliant on immigrant labor for whether it's the service sector in these resort communities like Aspen or Telluride, these ski areas, or in the agricultural sector. So what's happening right now with immigration, I think, is going to be hugely impactful in next year's midterm elections.
Wow. So do you have any other reporter notebooks to share with us who could further illuminate some of these points?
Well, actually, I'd love now to go to Wyoming. So Wyoming is part of our Rocky Mountain Community Radio Coalition, and Wyoming is very different politically. As we're going to hear, it's a very conservative state. Mm-hmm. But Jackson Hole, which is in the southwest part of Wyoming, is the reporter that we'll hear from describes it. It's a very blueberry in a very red soup. And they had No King's rally earlier today, and there was actually some conflict at that, which I think is reflective of the tension that exists when you have a community that is not reflective of the politics of the wider state. So let's now go to the report from No King's Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
My name is Sophia Boyd-Fliegel. I'm the managing editor at KHOL. We're the community radio station in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, in the northwest near the Idaho border.
Sophia, what was the No King's rally like in Jackson Hole?
I've been to 4 or 5 protests this year on Jackson Town Square with the iconic antler arches that were against the Trump administration in some form. This was certainly the most well-attended. There were probably between 500 and 700 people there at one time, but it was also the most tense.
Oh, tell us about that. What was the tension? What was the atmosphere like? What was happening?
Well, right when I walked in, that was just before 10 a.m., I saw a truck with Wyoming plates that started circling the crowd and circling the square. Two young men were in this truck. One was hanging out of the window, shouting expletives out of the truck at the crowd. An older man came out of the crowd and held his sign in their face. And then when one of them started the tapping on his sign, the protester threw a punch inside the passenger vehicle open window. These guys got out of the truck and a scuffle ensued. I later learned that this guy was a 67-year-old Jackson Hole local. He wasn't really clear with me about why he felt the need to throw a punch, but the police were called. I didn't see any show up, so I don't know if they didn't feel the need to come, but I also saw another young woman try to push back a car, and then on both of these occasions, people from the crowd, this big crowd for Jackson, were surrounding those people that were engaging with the vehicles that were kind of counter-protesting and like pulling them back. And there were a couple of people like really trying to keep the peace down because there were a lot of cars that were passing were honking in support. But there were some really tense moments when cars that were not in agreement with the No Kings sentiment, there was interaction between them and the crowd, which is something I haven't seen at other rallies in our town this year.
Well, for people who are listening who maybe aren't familiar with the political landscape in Wyoming and how Jackson Hole fits in with that, could we maybe put it into context about how Wyoming is itself a very conservative state, where Jackson Hole tends to not reflect that politically? That might put what you're talking about into a little bit of context.
Yeah, Jackson is a blue berry in a red soup. Wyoming is one of the most conservative states in the nation by who we vote for in presidential elections. In the most recent election, our state went almost 70% for Trump, and it was the inverse ratio for Teton County. There's a lot of money here, but there is also a lot of more like liberal attitudes that you would see kind of across the economic spectrum. There's definitely on the local and national political level, the majority opinions and the majority voting is for Democratic candidates.
You're also right beside a national park, the Grand Teton National Park. And so you're also living through a lot of the impact of not just the government shutdown and how that's impacting things like public lands and national parks, but also the layoff of federal workers that have been happening over the last few months. Was any of that reflected in the No Kings rally today?
Definitely. I saw a lot of signs and chants that were referencing protecting federal lands and protecting federal workers. I also did talk to some federal workers, none of whom wanted to use their names. They wanted to let me know that they were really scared and upset about not only the protection and preservation of public lands with kind of threats of sell-offs and cutting staffing, some see as a threat to the preservation of public lands, but also just a lot of concern from these 200 to 300 estimated federal workers in our community that they might not have their jobs in a week.
Well, Sophia Boyd-Fleagle from KHOL in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, thank you very much for taking time to talk to us today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Maeve.
Yes, so Jenna, as I was saying, many of our radio stations that are part of the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Coalition are in these gateway communities that they're right beside these national parks, whether it's Yellowstone, Grand Teton, the Arches in Moab in Utah, of course, the Rocky Mountain National Park, and a lot of public lands. And so these communities are really being infected, not just by the government shutdown, but of course, all of the layoffs that we've seen over the last few months of federal workers. And we're seeing that those concerns really being played out in these No Kings rallies all across the region today.
I bet. So also, I want to say that we have a reporter, actually, speaking of the region that you cover, Maeve, and that is Verity Matthew from Rocky Mountain Community Radio at KGNU. Verity, how's it going?
Hello. It's busy.
I can imagine for a No Kings rally. Can you tell us a little bit about exactly where you are and who and how many people came out?
Certainly. Well, right now I am on the south side of the Capitol building because the west side, where all the people are gathered, is pandemonium. So they said that there were about 35 to 40,000 people for the Bernie Sanders AOC rally earlier this year. And this, I believe, is bigger than that. So I would say there are probably at least 50,000 people out on the streets right now. We had several speakers come up and talk about issues that were germane to their specific organizations and so forth, and then began a march that was led by the Party for Socialism and Liberation. And what that looked like was people started to march, and I sat and watched a street with full of people just kept going by me, and it was a full hour of people just trying to get into line to march. So it's very big, it's boisterous, there's a lot of joy happening, there's lots of costumes, there's a bunch of kids, and of course it's Denver, so there's dogs. Kind of negligible police presence, which I think Denver knows that they need to have a better look when it comes to police presence at protests because of all the mistakes that were made in the 2020 George Floyd protests.
And just for anybody who might not remember, what exactly were those mistakes that were made?
So there were abuses, there were unlawful detentions, people were arrested and charged with crimes that they didn't end up being convicted of, and then turned around and sued the city for many tens of millions of dollars.
Okay, all right. And of course, those are taxpayer dollars that pay off those settlements. Is there anything else? I mean, you were saying it's pandemonium on the other side of the Capitol building. Any other specific, like, lawmakers or anybody notable from the Colorado contingency that would have showed up for this?
You know, we didn't hear from anyone of great note, which was unfortunate. We did hear from a former state assemblyman, Joe Salazar. We heard from some folks that worked at the Federal Center. And so it's just, there's a ton of people, most of whom seem to be having a great time. And something that is specific to this engagement is that there's a little bit of a tent city happening in Civic Center Park, which is just across the street from the Capitol, where they have over 60 organizations for people to walk up to, see if they can make a connection. And the idea there is to really connect people with the organizations that best align with their views and issues that they care about. And then the goal is to have people at the tent to take an action, whether it's to make a social media post or sign a petition, sign up to volunteer, and so forth. So I think that something that's unique about what's going on in Denver is that the supporters of the rally are also trying to get people engaged in work and actions that they can take after today.
Yeah, yeah, because it's not just about today. There's also next steps. Verity Matthew, I want to thank you so much for joining us from Denver, Colorado. You're with, of course, Rocky Mountain Community Radio as well, specifically the station KGNU. But Verity, thanks so much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
All right. Maeve, I want to go back to you because that's some of the things that Verity brought up I thought were really nice. And that seems that even though these are protests that are grounded and rooted in some very serious issues, there seems to be a sense of joy and community amongst the crowds.
Absolutely. There's been a wonderful, really sense of community, as you said. And I'm hearing that from the rallies that took place really around the state. We did hear from our reporter in Wyoming. I will have to say that that is the only area that I've heard from in our region where I have connections with reporters, where yeah. there's been, you know, negative interaction. Of course, there have been some counter-protesters who show up. I covered the No Kings rally in my home community, which is a, you know, a smaller city close to Boulder. And that happened in June. And, you know, there were people who were driving up and down with Trump flags, but they were met with a sense of joy. Like, people were bringing their kids. And as Verity said, it's a very Colorado thing. You bring your dogs to a protest. And nowadays, kind of in reflection of what's happening in Portland, people are showing up in these huge inflatable costumes. So I'm seeing that happening at a lot of these No Kings protests as well. But just I would like to just put some clarity on something Verity said, which I think is really important for listeners around the country to know, because she said that she spoke to a lot of workers from the federal center. People might not be aware that outside of Washington, D.C., the largest concentration of federal agencies and employees is actually in Denver. There's a 600-acre campus called the Denver Federal Center, and it's got the U.S. Department of the Interior, Bureau of Land Management, Bureau of Reclamation, and a bunch of other federal agencies. And between that and other federal agencies, there's more than 11,000 federal workers in the Denver area alone. So this is an area that's really been impacted by the government shutdown, by the layoff of federal workers. And as Verity said there, and what we're hearing from other No Kings rally reports, this is a massive issue in this region.
Yeah, definitely. I understand you also have two more reporter notebooks to share with us.
Yes, well, we're going to go to, this is actually something I did. I stopped at one of the local rallies. All the rallies in Colorado seem to be spread out. They started rolling at 9 in the morning. As we're hearing, they're still going in Denver. And the one in Boulder actually is scheduled to start in about an hour's time. So I was able to, on the way to the studio, stop by a rally in Lafayette. It's one of the towns that's, you know, just east of Boulder where I am now. And I just wanted to speak to some of the folks. This was less of a rally where this was more people took over an intersection. So on all four sides of a very busy intersection, people showed up with signs, people in inflatable costumes, lots of people there with their dogs and their kids. I mentioned earlier, I spoke to some older folks who didn't necessarily want to be recorded, but they did want to say, you know, they were happy to have an opportunity to come out in their community. They didn't have the energy to go to one of the bigger rallies like in Denver, but they were really glad to be able to show up. So let's go now to the No Kings report from Lafayette, Colorado. And here's some of the voices of the protesters.
My name is Jeff Hale. I'm here at the Lafayette No Kings Day because us citizens need to be out and show what we really think about what's going on in this country.
Can you read me your sign and explain it a little bit to me?
My sign is basically GOP, Senate, and House. What's more important, saving your seat or saving democracy? Must be a real good job to have because they're willing to all sit back on their haunches and do absolutely nothing to guarantee that they're able to keep their job.
Have you come to previous No Kings, the previous No Kings or previous protests?
Yes, my wife has brought me to several of these protests over the last, well, since Trump got reelected.
Hi, my name is Barbara Martin. I'm here at the No Kings Lafayette because I'm very concerned about our democracy, and we all need to stand together to stand up to, you know, everything that's going on in our administration as far as, you know, the people that are being swept up by ICE, the corruption that's going on. We have to take a stand.
Can you tell me what's in your sign and why you've come with this sign today?
We stand with the trans community. It seems like there's been an uptick in resistance to accepting LGBTQ and the trans community, and we want them to know that we stand with them.
Jenna, I'd like to just flag what Barbara said there. That was one of the ladies I spoke to at that rally in Lafayette, a town here in Boulder County. And she said she was standing up for the trans community. That was her sign. I actually chatted with her after I turned off the tape, and I asked her if she was aware of the laws that were actually passed in Colorado at the state legislature just this year, giving extra protections to the trans community in response to what's happening at a federal level. So this year, there was a piece of legislation called the Kelly Loving Act, and it just extends and solidifies protections for trans individuals and particularly trans children. And Kelly Loving was a transgender woman who was killed in 2022. There was a mass shooting at Club Q, an LGBTQ club in Colorado Springs. And her memory has been honored now through this Kelly Loving Act. And so, as I said, it provides extra legal protections for trans individuals. But it amended the state's Anti-Discrimination Act to really solidify protection for trans folks within that, but also has, things for schools, where schools now must have a policy for inclusive chosen name policies, you know, for children who were receiving gender-affirming health care. It protects their parents. So this was really in response to what was happening at a federal level. And so I asked Barbara, who was there with her sign, and she was so pleased because she said, you know what, I wasn't aware of that. I actually just moved to Colorado earlier this year from Missouri, which has very different laws. So she was really pleased to hear what had happened here at a state level, because that was, you know, what she was there protesting about. She really wanted to make sure people remember what's happening to the trans community.
Of course. I mean, definitely a community that has been mentioned, I think, more times than even they could have imagined. I want to go now to another reporter who's actually in the field. We have Joy LeClaire, who's coming to us from Bozeman, Montana, representing the station KGVM. Joy, can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. Yes. So, Joy, tell us a little bit about the No King's Day protest that took place in Bozeman.
Well, it was from noon to 1 o'clock, and here in Montana, there were an estimated 30 organized protests happening, all the way from Little Libby, population 3,200, and Eureka, population 1,300 in the northwest of the state, down to Miles City in southeast Montana. And I also note, I heard the Jackson Hole reporter earlier, there were a reported 14 events organized in Wyoming. And I emphasize the organized because we have no way of knowing how many spontaneously happened around the region along roadways and overpasses. But here in Bozeman, people began gathering well before 11 o'clock for that action scheduled from noon to 1, lining both sides of Main Street. And it became clear after the hands-off rally last April in front of the county courthouse that a much larger space was needed for future events. But in order to get a permit, insurance was required. And since the big bucks purported to be funding these demonstrations are entirely mythical, folks had to spread out along Main Street in downtown for about 10 blocks instead of congregating in a space where it would have been easier to gauge a crowd estimate. But I can tell you this, each event since the first one last winter, which was a town hall at the Bozeman Public Library, and the veterans rally at the state capitol in Helena, to the hands-off rally last April, to the first No Kings in June, and now this one, each one has doubled the one before in terms of how many people came. And this crowd was much more multi-generational than the earlier ones. One woman who's 90-year-old said this was her first demonstration, and there were Montana State University freshmen, They said that they had come in support of STEM research and for relatives who had lost their jobs during DOGE and in support of immigrants. There was a noticeable veterans presence protesting troops in our cities and now the actions in the Caribbean off the coast of Venezuela. It was a lively, joyful gathering reflecting community spirit. There were costumes ranging from dinosaurs to frogs, chickens, unicorns, cows, a gorilla, lots of chanting and drumming and cars honking. There was a bicycle brigade, some pretty clever signs, some of them including, "The only orange monarchs we want are butterflies." The anti-fascist manifesto is our constitution. When cruelty becomes normal, compassion seems radical. There is no right and left, only right and wrong. Should I go on?
I think that's that collection of signs and those slogans definitely gives an understanding of how broad the issues were that people brought with them, or that at least brought them out to the protest in Bozeman.
And like I said, it was really joyful. I had hoped to get a phone call from the Bozeman Chief of Police, Jim Veldkamp. We were scheduled to have this phone call a couple of hours ago, but I haven't heard from him yet. The organizers had worked closely with the Bozeman Police Department, and there were multiple law enforcement agencies on hand in coordination and cooperation with the organizers, because some of the earlier protests, nothing serious, but there had been some disruptions, let's say.
Okay.
I didn't observe any incidents today, though.
Was there a police presence as well?
Oh, yes. The police were quite there, and they were both cruising down Main Street. They were on most corners, but they were not a menacing presence at all. Like I said, there had been a lot of cooperation and coordination with the organizers. I saw some of them like laughing also. You know, they're part of our community, and that's how we experience them today. So I think things maybe are a little different than places like Chicago, where there is more tension. Here, people for the most part feel supported by police and are happy to see them.
Okay. All right. Well, that's definitely different for some of the protests. But again, as you said, it depends on from community to community. Maeve, are you still with us?
I'm still here. Yeah, it's great to hear that report from Montana. I just love hearing these reports from actions in smaller communities, because so often the national focus is on the big cities. But I love hearing this energy coming from these smaller towns as well.
Every corner, every corner. Do you have one more reporter notebook you can share with us?
Yes, we're going to go next to Telluride, Colorado, and folks might be familiar with that name. It's the home of incredible festivals like the Film Festival, Jazz Festival. There's so much arts and culture going on there. It's also, interestingly, you know, the home of a lot of very wealthy people, but also a lot of people living on the margins too. Like many of these former mining towns in the Rocky Mountain West, they have now turned into resort communities, so like Aspen, Telluride. So we're going to go next to Telluride to hear the report there. It's a small community, and because it is very much a resort community and we're between seasons, right, the ski areas haven't opened yet. The fact that as many people that showed up who did show up, you know, that's really indicative of, you know, how passionate people feel. So let's go next to our No Kings report from Telluride, Colorado.
This is Julia Caulfield. I'm the news director at KOTO Radio in Telluride, Colorado, on the western slope, and I am here in front of the San Miguel County Courthouse at the No Kings protest and march.
Julia, tell us a little bit about what that protest looked like today. Did you have a big turnout? What kinds of folks were coming out today?
It was a huge turnout. Honestly, I've lived here for almost 7 years, and I've never seen a crowd rally this big before. We had about 250 people standing in front of the courthouse, giving speeches, walking down, basically, honestly, filling the full length of town. We walked from the courthouse. They walked down to the post office, which is at the other end, and all the way back again. And they really filled the whole street.
For folks who are listening who aren't familiar with Telluride, they might know the name because there are some pretty significant festivals that happen there. But it's also a very small rural town in western Colorado. Can you just maybe describe what Telluride is like for people who are listening right now?
Yeah, so we are a small little community snuggled up in a box canyon in Southwest Colorado. We're a ski town. We also have a lot of festivals in the summer. One thing that I think is actually very impressive about the march today is we are technically in the off season now, right? We're in that time between the busy summer festival season and the winter ski season. So this is a time that normally calms down a bit. There's fewer people in town. Some of the businesses have closed for a break after a really busy season. So the fact that so many people did come out today is really impressive. With us, that it is a gorgeous day, bright blue skies, bluebird day, still a couple leaves before the snow comes in, and it's a really impressive turnout.
What were some of the things that were on folks' minds? What were people telling you were the reasons they were coming out to protest today?
You know, a lot of it is kind of what you would expect, right? It's the what they feel as the fall of democracy in some ways, you know, coming out saying we don't want any kings. This isn't what our country was built on. We come from a democracy that actively separated itself from a king. So there's a lot of that kind of general sentiment. You know, we actually had we had ICE come into our community today and arrest a member of the community. And so we also had folks who were talking about that and the importance of standing up, showing support and solidarity for our immigrant community, and people just feeling all in all fed up with the direction that our government is going right now.
Well, Julia, thank you very much for taking time to talk to us. Julia Caulfield, the news director at KOTO Radio in Telluride, joining us now. Thanks, Julia.
Thanks, Maeve. Always a pleasure chatting with you.
So that's just one report of about 60 estimated planned No Kings events that took place in Colorado. As we heard, there were several in Wyoming, in Montana, but the Rocky Mountain region had a lot of folks showing up for No Kings, Jenna.
I can imagine. Actually, speaking of a lot of people showing up, we're going to go live right now to, I believe, Stacey Abrams speaking in Atlanta, Georgia.
And NPR losing their funding because they don't want us to know what we know. They can tell a lie a thousand times and make it sound like the truth. And they take over CBS, and they take over NBC, and they take over ABC, and they take over TikTok because they don't want us to know the truth because propaganda sounds better. Then you get to step seven. And step seven is the most dangerous step. Because then you got to blame someone for the government you've broken, for the people you've hurt. And so you accuse transgender people of causing inflation. You say that immigrants are a scourge on our nation. You blame black pilots for having success. You go after the disabled and you go after the vulnerable. You go after DEI, not because you care about the letters, but because you despise the mission. Diversity means all people. Equity means fair access to opportunity. Inclusion means respect for belonging. They're not mad about the letters. They're mad about the mission. They're mad because they know that DEI is in our DNA. This is a nation built on DEI. This is a country that came into being saying that we are going to do better than our forebears so we can do better by our children. DEI is who we are, and that's why they go after it day after day, time after time, because you can't have a pluralistic democracy if you get rid of the plurals. Then you get to step eight, just in case folks like the ACLU try to sue and protect us, just in case labor unions unite to protect us, just in case universities try to teach us, just in case protesters try to show up and remind us of who we are. They go after step eight. They try to break civil society because they're preparing us for step nine. And step nine is when they start to normalize violence. You see, I believe in the nonviolent revolution. Because it works. It is the only thing that has ever truly consistently worked. But instead of that, what they want us to do is believe that we're in danger if we speak up, that we're in danger if we aggregate, that if we assemble like the First Amendment tells us we can, that there's a problem. And so we have a paramilitary called ICE that's breaking into houses and arresting people, kidnapping folks off the streets. We have the National Guard occupying our country, occupying our cities. We have a military occupation of Washington, D.C. And if we heard that on the news anywhere else, we would be up in arms. And yet here in America, we're supposed to just take it as normal. We're supposed to believe that it's okay that we have the military invasion of Portland and Chicago, of Memphis, and of L.A. We're supposed to believe that it's normal to have a secret mass police roaming the streets of America. That's not normal. That's intentional. Because what they want us to do is to not notice that they've gotten to step 10. And the step 10 is when we end democracy for everyone. That's why Texas is redrawing its maps. That's why Missouri redrew its maps. That's why Georgia purged 400,000 people from its rolls. That's why they're trying to gut the second Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. Because they want to break democracy forever. We're going to have elections. Russia has elections. Turkey has elections. Venezuela has elections. But if they already know who's going to win, what's the point of showing up? Their destination is to take our country from us. And if there are 10 steps to autocracy and 10 steps to authoritarianism, Atlanta, I'm here to tell you there are 10 steps to freedom and power. That's what we're here for. There are 10 steps to freedom and to power, to health care for all. There are 10 steps to protecting our patriots. There are 10 steps to protecting our democracy. There are 10 steps to protecting our right to control our bodies and control our futures and control our minds. We've got to commit, say commit. We've got to share, say share. We have got to organize, say organize. We've got to mobilize, say mobilize. We've got to litigate, say litigate. We have got to disrupt, say disrupt. We have got to deny them the ability to take our language, say deny. We have got to engage, say engage. We have got to elect, say elect. And when we get those 9 steps done, we are going to demand the nation we deserve. Say demand. Say demand. Say demand. We demand our freedom. We demand our power. We demand our freedom. We demand our power. We demand our freedom. We demand our power. We've got 10 steps to get there, 10 steps to get where we need to be. And it's going to take every one of us walking those steps together. We don't all have to do the same thing, but we've all got to do something. And if we take these 10 steps, if we do this work, then we will claim the destination of pluralism. We will claim the destination of democracy, and we will claim the destination of justice, and we will show them who we are. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, first of all, that was, of course, the Stacey Abrams speaking live in Atlanta, Georgia, in case you missed that. But Maeve, I want to go to you and just say thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to your amazing team of reporters that covered so much ground, so many square mile footage in the Rocky Mountain region.
Thank you so much, Jenna. And a big thanks to you and all the folks at Pacifica for really shining a spotlight in these regions that don't often get their day in the sun when it comes to national coverage and being able to talk about these issues that are very specific to this region. So thank you so much.
All right. Well, we'll be right back with Hour 6 as we head to the Pacific time zone, and we'll visit next with Althea Billings, news director of KBOO, Pacifica's affiliate in Portland, Oregon. See you on the other side.
Democracy is coming to the USA. Sold on the love heart. Say it on.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is KBOO and Pacifica Radio Network's live coverage of the No Kings demonstration across the country. We'll be simulcasting through 5 p.m. The motif is preempted, but we'll be back next Saturday for their regularly scheduled program. The next segment will focus on local demonstrations here in Portland. Althea Billings will join Jenna Flanagan at WBAI at NYC. Stay tuned.
The cradle of the best and of the worst. It's here they've got the